We're talking about COVID testing on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. On the Harvard Health blog this month, it says there are hundreds of COVID diagnostic tests that have been granted emergency use authorization through the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. But it's not exactly clear how accurate any of these tests are. Some reassurance, though, on the PCR test, the false positive rate should be close to zero, meaning it would be rare for your test results to say you have COVID when you don't. Bring on COVID test questions. Molecular tests, also known as PCR, antibody tests, antigen tests, 800-642-1234. Dave O'Connor is the UW Medical Foundation Professor of Pathology and Laboratory Medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dave, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Great to be here with you, Kate.
Well, let's start with PCR tests, better understanding them. This is what UW-Madison is rolling out through a saliva-based testing program that will start with a spring semester starting Monday. First, let me run through all the disclosures. WPR is a service of UW-Madison, which means I'm a UW-Madison employee, which means I participate in the testing program since I come to campus, which means I tested on campus yesterday, and when I woke up this morning, my Safer Badger app had turned green. Green is go. I don't know, Dave, have I missed any disclosures here?
Well, for my part, I'm also a UW-Madison employee, though I have no role in the Safer Badgers program. I haven't been involved in it at all.
Okay. So can you explain then the molecular PCR test, its pros and cons?
Well, the molecular tests, these so-called PCR tests, have become the gold standard because they are tests that are very, very sensitive at picking up even trace amounts of virus. And that can be really good for identifying which people have any amount of virus in their system. And so if you're really trying to find as many people as possible who are infected, PCR is the most sensitive way to go. One of the things you have to consider is what the goal of your testing program is. Is it to find people who have trace amounts of virus who are not necessarily going to transmit the virus to others? Or is it to try to identify the people who are most contagious? So when you talk about there being hundreds of different tests, those different tests can have different purposes. Some, to try to find as many people as you can who have any virus at all in their systems. Others, like the so-called antigen tests, are better at finding people who are likely contagious and are the most likely to transmit the virus to others.
Is there a gold standard yet, a gold standard test?
Well, there is no one test that satisfies every possible combination. So the PCR is the gold standard for picking up the smallest amounts of virus with the greatest sensitivity. But in some cases, that might be counterproductive because if someone has a trace amount of virus that is detectable by PCR, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have enough virus or that they're coughing or expelling enough virus that they can infect other people. So you need to match the test to what you're hoping the testing program is going to accomplish.
Well, let's say a testing program wants to accomplish finding all the asymptomatic people. It sounds like there are different thresholds of being asymptomatic.
Sure. So there are. So if you think about the biology of an infection, as soon as you're infected, there's going to be a period where there's a tiny, tiny amount of virus that eventually becomes a huge amount of virus. And that small amount of virus becomes a large amount of virus really quickly, say in 24 hours. So there, it really is good to have the most sensitive test if you're trying to find all of those people right as their viral shedding is starting to take off. But then you have the issue that after people have gone through this peak window of contagiousness and the amount of virus is tailing off, well, now you're back down to a place where only the PCR tests are going to test positive. But at that point, a PCR test isn't going to tell you very much about contagiousness, even after you've had symptoms. So again, it's complex and it's difficult. And for asymptomatics, I think the best thing we can do is to think that testing is one piece of a very large puzzle. But the biggest thing is that we need to take other measures and assume that people are infected, because if someone's asymptomatic, it's going to be really, really hard to catch them with any sort of reliability.
Okay, so taking other measures, meaning still wear the mask, still social distance, still wash your hands a lot.
Absolutely.
We're talking with Dave O'Connor, an infectious disease researcher at UW-Madison, where his lab focuses on viral infections impacting human health. He's been working on COVID testing as well. You can join in with your questions about the various tests. Have you ever had a rapid COVID test done? How long did it take for you to get results? What were the results? 800-642-1234. Dave, take us into these rapid COVID tests. Also, the antigen test. How does this rapid test compare to others?
Yeah, this is where we're really excited and have been spending most of our time. So you asked earlier about asymptomatic transmission. That accounts for about 50% of infections. People who are newly symptomatic account for the other 50% of infections. And these antigen tests, which cost $5 compared to the $100 for a PCR test, and take 15 minutes to give results instead of hours to days, can pick up those 50% of infections caused by people who are symptomatic really, really well. And so we've been working over the last several months to make it possible for K-12 schools in Dane County to run antigen tests on site. So if a teacher or a student develops symptoms while they're at school, a school nurse or someone else in the school who's trained can run an antigen test and in 15 minutes can determine whether or not an individual's symptoms are due to COVID.
Okay, and so then you can run the interference very quickly because time is really important here.
Right, because the window where someone is contagious is really short. If you can find out within the first 24 hours of someone developing symptoms that they're infected, then that individual and their family and their household contacts can take the sort of precautions necessary to stop transmission from occurring. One of the things we know about the virus is that 10% or so of people who are infected account for about 80% of the transmission. And that's because when you have these people who are in this contagiousness window, they're really, really likely to spread the virus to others. And so if you can intercept them in that window, that's where you're going to have the biggest bang for your buck.
What do you see in terms of the reception from schools? Are you able to get these into the schools? What is the status of that?
So we were lucky in November. We received an allocation of 5,000 of what are called BNACs now antigen tests from the Department of Health and Human Services. And we've been able to bring those into Dane County schools, with more than 80 schools now each receiving one box of these tests that they can use on symptomatic people in their school communities. And we've worked with them to get the regulatory approvals. We've worked with Public Health Madison Dane County to make sure that all the schools are following the same best practices. And now that we have all of these schools that are running these tests successfully and have this capability, we're working with the Department of Health Services, who are working with us to get an additional allocation of about 50,000 tests that we hope to be able to bring to the schools over the next several months, so that each school in Dane County that's part of this program can run these tests reliably through the rest of the school year. And then if that works well, hopefully this sort of testing in Dane County can be a model for other places in the state.
UW Pathology and Laboratory Medicine Professor Dave O'Connor breaking down testing for COVID, where we stand. Have you been able to find local testing when you need it? Did you order an at-home test from DHS? Did you understand the type of COVID test you were receiving, you were taking? Have you had a false negative test, or have you had to retest if your specimen wasn't acceptable? Bring your questions, your situation on testing, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dave O'Connor here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about COVID tests here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. UW-Madison anticipates it will administer up to 70,000 saliva tests each week on the campus testing program. COVID testing requirements get underway with the spring semester that starts Monday. Are you taking regular COVID tests at home or through your workplace or school? How is it going? What questions do you have about those tests? Join in 800-642-1234. UW School of Medicine and Public Health Pathology Professor Dave O'Connor is our guide with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Jackie now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Jackie. What is your question?
Hi. I guess it's more of a comment than anything. First of all, I want to appreciate you having the speaker on this morning to give this information. I just kind of want maybe he could elaborate a little bit. There's been a lot of misinformation or people misunderstanding about what the different tests mean. There's doctors and school districts around an area that I'm aware of that are saying that the quick test is just as effective or in telling whether somebody has COVID or not. We have people running in to get tests when they're not necessarily symptomatic and thinking that they're okay. So just wanted to pass that along because I think there is a lot of education that needs to be done about these different tests.
Jackie, thank you. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And it is hard to understand because it's true that a large number of infections, about half, happen when people are asymptomatic. So some amount of testing for people who are asymptomatic makes sense because that does account for about half the infections. However, you need to test a huge number of people, as you described for the UW-Madison testing program, in order to find the needle in a haystack, that person who feels fine and is infected. Whereas with the symptomatic testing, your yield is going to be a lot better, because the other half of transmissions are in people who already feel sick. And so the presence of symptoms is an indication for the value of testing. And because you do have this really short couple of day window when you're most likely to transmit the virus, that's where we really have to be focusing our attention, in my opinion, if we want to use testing to slow the spread of the virus, is stopping transmission more than finding every last person who might have a trace amount of virus in their system.
Has the cost of these test kits come down through the pandemic? Because we're talking about, you know, so many more tests in individual campuses and workplaces. What are the costs?
Well, yeah, so the PCR tests still remain very expensive. So Medicare reimburses these at $110 per test. And so there's a really entrenched interest now for the companies and the, you know, providers of these PCR tests to perform them at $110 a piece. I don't know what the cost of the at-scale tests are for a program like Safer Badgers, but I know that other similar programs do PCR tests that are more economical in the $30 to $40 per test range. But that still is a lot more expensive than the rapid antigen test that I was talking about before the break, where they're $5 per test.
What about the supply chain here? Do we have enough reagents? Do we have enough of those little vials and tops and all of the things that you need in order to actually do these tests?
Yeah, that's a great point. Because there's been so many different institutions and universities and places performing tests, the little plastic pieces that we need to do all kinds of biomedical research are in really short supply. And so that has been a real challenge. Fortunately, some of the other types of tests, like the antigen tests, are self-contained and don't require any sort of specialized equipment or plasticware.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with UW-Madison pathology professor Dave O'Connor, and he is talking with us about COVID testing, the various tests, and what he is working on. Have you had trouble accessing a COVID test where you live? Tell us what issues you've had. Did you have the virus but were asymptomatic? When were you tested? How has that affected your life? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dan wrote a comment on WPR. Dan says, if expensive at-home self-administered antigen tests had not been blocked by the FDA, we could have a 30-pack in our medicine chest right now. And Dan thinks PCR tests haven't done enough to control the virus. Can you comment at all on that?
Yeah, so I'd thank Dan for that comment because I think that speaks very much to the same sort of strategy that we're trying to use in schools, that democratizing and decentralizing testing is really important. If you can do that at home for $5, that would be even better than having to do it in schools. But being able to do it in schools and having hundreds or thousands of schools being able to perform testing on people who are symptomatic is better, in my opinion, than the sort of centralized testing we have today. So we're making steps in the right direction, but it has been a real challenge to get testing where it can be most useful.
Okay, what about specimen here? Is there a difference between getting a throat swab, a nasal swab, or a saliva sample?
So there are differences, but they're really on the margins. So those brain ticklers that were that people dread that they got early in the epidemic are still the absolute best. But we know that the simple ones where you stick a Q-tip up your nose a little bit until it's uncomfortable, or if you spit or drool, that there is enough virus in there that is assuming you're infected and have a reasonable amount of virus shedding, you're going to pick it up in any of the specimen types.
Let's talk about mutation and this virus. We knew of a variant and found it in Wisconsin, B117. What do you see about mutations now as you study COVID?
Yeah, so my lab, along with other UW-Madison investigator Tom Friedrich, have been doing a lot of the genomic surveillance for these variants in Dane County and with our partners in the city of Milwaukee. And we haven't seen them in Dane County or Milwaukee yet, but it probably is just a matter of time. It's really important that we look for these variants as well as other variants that are going to continue to arise because there's the possibility that some of these variants could be more transmissible, which is what we see with this so-called B117 variant. And it's also possible that some of these variants could make it difficult for diagnostic tests to perform appropriately, for therapeutics to work as well. And some of them could conceivably, though there's no evidence for this yet, impact the effectiveness of vaccines. So we really need to be watchful over what the variants are and where and when they're occurring. They will occur, but we just need to we need to have eyes on that.
Let's bring in Mark now in Kimberly. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Way back in the spring, BBC Science in Action program reported a feces test that anybody can do themselves, a stool test. And I guess, I don't know if it's a test paper that turns color or something. And it only costs $1. And, other countries, must be testing more broadly with something like this to get it under control.
Mark, thanks. Are you aware, Dave, of this particular test?
So one of the things that we saw early on is that some people do shed virus in their feces, not as much as you see in saliva or nasal swabs, but enough that you can use wastewater as a way of determining how much virus is in the community. So the individual feces tests have not really taken off, but what has been really useful is taking the wastewater where all that feces is collected and then sampling that for the presence of virus and then measuring how much virus is there to say, okay, there's growing amounts of virus in all of the wastewater or the amount of virus is going down in the wastewater, and using that as a way of determining what the trajectory of the virus is within a community. So it has been useful, but more in that community surveillance capacity.
Yeah, so a snapshot of a fuller area and looking at it through time too, I would imagine that would kind of help you understand whether the virus is spreading or not, but in a very much more of an a snapshot of a whole area.
Absolutely.
So as we start to wrap up here, what are you as a scientist working on next with COVID testing?
Well, the biggest thing in terms of testing is this implementation lift of trying to make sure that schools can run antigen tests on symptomatic members of their community, working with the state to be able to get more of these tests so that it becomes less of a barrier for participating schools to get testing. You also have to realize that a lot of the existing testing can be inaccessible to people who have transportation barriers or can't make it to test sites for scheduled appointments or during the hours that they're open. And so making it so that people who are symptomatic can get tests easily, can get those results, and that close contacts can take precautions is really where we think you're going to see big improvements. And we're really delighted that the state's working with us to make it possible to figure out how these programs can work best.
Dave, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Dave O'Connor is a professor of pathology and laboratory medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Ahead this hour, on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, we discuss what abortion and reproductive health might look like under the new Biden administration. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.